This is America's game. Now stop humming this, everything will change. That warp tool make you open your brain. Eric Vanek is here, so remember the name. He got the waiver wire for the week. Tell you who to start and who to give a seat. Dropping the podcast every week. You know the knowledge is elite. After the show, we gon' hold a Lombardi. Celebrating like we throwing a party. This the blueprint and I know they gon' copy. Cup humming intros always go the hardest. Cause this is America's game.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to America's Game, episode number 78. I'm your host, Eric Vanek, and you can find me on Twitter, at EricVanekNFL. And this week, I am joined by Koopa. Koopa, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Enjoying listening to the America's Game intro at normal speed, because, you know, I usually listen to this podcast at 2x, and sounds a little bit different when you're listening to things at normal.
Yeah, I have the same problems with a lot of my other podcasts too. If I ever switch it off to like go listen to the actual YouTube version of something or whatever, and it's at regular speed, it's like, man, talk faster. You know, it's crazy how much that changes. But yeah, man, everything's going good here. Hopefully, everything's going good with you. We had some really good playoff games this past weekend. What'd you think of them?
I love watching playoff football because you aren't going to get those games where you're halfway through the first quarter and you're like, this game is done. Like, there's no way that this one team just looks so much better than the other. It's never going to turn around. You don't get that in playoff games. You still get that. Even in situations where you're talking the final score is 45-31, like, you're still going to end up in that. Going into the fourth quarter, it was like, the Lions aren't out of it. Like, they can still come back if their defense finds a way to put it together. Like, they get a couple quick drives in. And so, like, that's what I love about playoff football is the game goes on until the end.
Yeah. Kind of like 2 weeks ago when the Broncos and the Bills played. Like, it was 13-7 at half, and it was pretty close. And then the Bills kind of ran away with it from there. So, yeah, I get that. Yeah, I mean, that Washington and Lions game was crazy. I actually, on my betting, I took Washington with the points. They were getting 8.5. I figured it'd be a close game, but I definitely didn't see Washington just beating them like that. But I think that a lot of that had to do with the turnovers and all that. You just can't turn the ball over in the postseason and expect to win like that.
Yeah, you can't. And the same thing goes with, like, the Ravens. Like, they're the team that I was rooting for the most going into the playoffs because I'm a 49ers fan first and then Ravens second. And just seeing the number of turnovers that they had that game, like, they don't turn the ball over 3 times and they've won that game. Like, it was 100%. And everyone talks about, like, Mark Andrews, like, at the end there. Like, yeah, he dropped that pass, but there's also multiple things that happened earlier in that game that such that he shouldn't have been in the position of needing to catch that pass for the 2-point conversion. That was the bail them out strategy, and that didn't work. And so, yeah. Like, it just always remember that, like, when you see something like that, it's never one player has done something wrong. You can never point to one play in a game. Like, there's a reason there's 60 minutes of football. It's because you have 60 minutes to do stuff, and there's a lot of time to get good things done or for bad things to happen.
All right. And then, let's see, Texans and Chiefs. That was a decent game. It's probably, like, the least exciting of the 3 games on the weekend, or the 4 games. But, it was, you know, kind of typical Chiefs stuff, like, you know, all the route, you know, everybody says the refs helped them out and whatnot. And yeah, there were some questionable calls in that game for sure. But here we go again, Bills and Chiefs again this weekend. So I think that's going to be a really good championship game as usual between those two teams. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I don't know how many people had Eagles Washington as their NFC championship game, but here we are. So I think that's going to probably be my favorite game of the week, just to see if Jaden Daniels can get it done again. He's already beat the Eagles once this year. Can he go ahead and get it done and take Washington to the Super Bowl, which would be mind-blowing, because I don't think very many people outside of like hardcore Washington fans had that happening. But a rookie quarterback taking his team to the finals like that, and it's not like it's like you know, a Ben Roethlisberger situation or Russell Wilson's like first season where like the defense is the one carrying him and all that, and like he just makes some okay plays. No, it's Jaden Daniels taking the team on his back and riding them all the way to the, you know, finals there. So yeah, definitely looking forward to both of those games. How do you think they're gonna come out here? Who you think's gonna go to the Super Bowl?
I think that the two teams that are going to end up going to the Super Bowl are the Eagles and Chiefs. The two teams I want in the Super Bowl are the Commanders and the Bills.
Right.
So I'm going to be rooting for the teams that I think are more likely to lose in both games. But, you know, that's also some of the fun of football, is root for the team that you want to and hope they come out on top.
Yeah. I definitely would love to see Washington in there, but I don't think it's going to happen. So I think it's going to be Eagles or Eagles Bills or Eagles Chiefs. I can't really decide on this Eagles and or Bills and Chiefs game. Like those teams have just played each other so many times in the playoffs, regular season games too. It's always been close. Like can Buffalo finally get it done? It is in Kansas City, so I give like Kansas City a slight edge there. Spagnuolo's still there, like one of the best defensive coordinators in history. So yeah, man, it's gonna be a wild game, and that'll be the last game of the weekend too. So we'll see what happens there. So on this episode, kind of like last week, where we did talked about some startup strategies and startups, just how we like to go about it. I brought Koopa on this week to kind of talk about his process and how he goes through doing a startup league as well. So yeah, we'll just kind of start from, you know, kind of the beginning there. Like when you're looking for a startup, what kind of settings are you looking for? You know, what's your favorite kind of startup? Is it, you know, T-Rock said he likes to do auction. Do you like auction? Do you like snake drafts, third round reversals? What are some of the kind of the settings that you like to go for?
I very much prefer auction drafts. But before I even get to settings for a league, what I've realized at this point is I value much more the other owners that are going to be in the league. And I value who those people are and not necessarily just joining a league because I'm invited to it. And so already that this offseason, I've joined one league. And the reason I joined that league is because it was three of the people in one of my most active leagues, like the three people that are the most active, were like, hey, I want to make a new startup, and they were getting the active people from the other leagues that they are all in and putting 12 of us together who are just people who just live and breathe Dynasty. And so that's the kind of thing that I'm starting with. And if you have that, I could care less as much about what the settings are, because I'm kind of like you, Eric, in that I have a ton of leagues. This past year, I think it was 42 Dynasty leagues that I was in. And so at that point, you have settings that run across the full spectrum, where as long as you aren't only joining like the same kind of league over and over and over again, like you're going to have some where it's like, oh, this is my league that has the two tight ends, 1.75 tight end PPR. And this is the league that is the bog standard one. This is the one where you have one super flex, or you have two super flexes and everything else is a flex. And like you have all your other leagues, the whole variety, where joining any specific league at this point for me is not anything. It's not anything that I'm like, oh, I don't want to join this one because I don't like the settings. I am much more focused on who are the managers, who am I actually going to be playing this with? Going into like if I had to make a league, what am I trying to do? I want it to be something different. And so last year I made a league the you're in it, Eric, called Koopa Talk. The whole point of the league was I wanted to do something where nobody knew what to do. And so I purposely utilized my own warp tool when I was designing the settings for this league to say, how can I make every single position as equal as possible? And I played with the scoring settings for, I went back with Pello, and some of the people listening to this might know who he is. And we just went back and forth for a good couple days of just tweaking settings, rerunning the warp tool and talking about, okay, what do we think the, this would do to, as you're trying to build your team, to try to make it so literally you could build off of anything. And so we put together this wacky league that nobody has a blueprint for how you're going to win this thing. And I think that is the most exciting kind of league. I don't want a league where you are going into it knowing, okay, if you're going to be a championship contender, you need two of the top eight quarterbacks. Or if you're going to be a championship contender and you don't have a top six wide receiver, you're seriously missing out. Like, stuff like that, where I want there to be flexibility in roster construction, flexibility in how you actually are designing your teams, because then that allows me to say, I can play the market in different ways. If the market is saying, hey, we want a bunch of quarterbacks, if I know I don't need a quarterback, then I can get some cheap quarterbacks and invest in other positions where the league's market is not paying attention. And that's how I want to try and play those things. And so that's what is most exciting to me, is having that flexibility where I'm not focused in on any one strategy, and I can kind of adjust it based on what the league is actually saying.
Okay. Yeah, so you're just, any kind of settings is fine. You kind of want the settings to be more equal across all positions. So, like, when you do go into a strategy, you know, if it's 2 points per tight end and then everything still matches up, like, you can go all tight end, you can go all receivers, all running backs, all quarterbacks, whatever you want to do, and go from there. So, yeah, I'm in a couple leagues like that. Like you said, you mentioned I'm in the Koopa League, too, with you that you created. So, yeah, it's like, really don't know where to go with it. I kind of just try to get some players that I didn't have in a lot of my leagues. It didn't work out too well. But, yeah, it was a fun league. And like you said, I'm in a ton of leagues like that. And I think I agree with you, like, having leagues where you don't know the strategy going in makes it a lot more fun. Like, you can kind of just go wherever you want. Like, whichever player you're feeling is the best value at that spot, you can just take them. You're not, you know, I got to get at all these quarterback strategy, or, oh, it's a point per carry, I got to grab all these running back strategy. Like, it is literally just kind of take the best player available that you think at that moment and kind of build your team that way. So it kind of makes everybody either a little bit balanced, or everyone builds their team a totally different way than you, and we'll see who's the best strategy that works out.
It kind of lets you do as well what T-Rock was talking about last week, of one of the things that he wants to do for this coming year is just invest in players that he likes. Like, the guys that he wants to root for on Sunday is the guys that he wants on his team. And when you have a league where you can play any strategy, that allows you to be able to be like, hey, you know what? I'm in round six, and I really like the guys that are on the board. Maybe I want to root for Najee Harris this season. Then you can go and get Najee Harris. You aren't sitting there going, but I already have a running back one, and the optimal strategy is to just pass on running back and keep hammering the wide receivers, and I'm never going to end up with a guy like that on my team. And so you're able to root for the players that you want to root for by getting them onto your team and not being forced into, I know this is the optimal way for me to try and win a championship, so I have to avoid these players that are in these buckets.
Yeah, and another reason that we both love auction leagues too. Same thing. I can get the players I want. If, you know, Saquon Barkley comes up for auction and I really want him, I can go get him. You know, if Marvin Harrison Jr. comes up on up there and I don't really want him, I don't have to bid on him. Somebody else can bid on him. And there's also games to play with that. Like, do I bid this guy up even though I really don't want him? Do I bid accidentally bid too much and I end up getting stuck with this guy I really didn't want. So there's all different kinds of games you could play in an auction as well. So that's why I like auctions as well. How about like as far as roster spots? Is there like a sweet spot you have? Is it, you know, do you like 25 man rosters, 30, 40? You know, what's your kind of flavor there?
I prefer deeper the better in almost every instance. I think when you're getting to the point where it's like, okay, every team has 40 to 45 players, like, okay, you're starting to get a little bit too much. But I love those leagues where you have like 35 to 40. And so if you recognize like, hey, this guy is on the team's practice squad, but they elevated him last game, like, let me just go and pick him up and just see what happens. And then that next week is the one where they actually incorporated him into their offensive strategy. And he comes out and, yeah, he's not going to blow you away. He's still a practice squad receiver, but he gets you three catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. Like, that, it's so much fun to be able to say, I actually hit on that. Like, I recognize that that was happening, rather than that guy, like, sitting and fading away on your watch list or something like that. And I use my watch list as a, every single week on Tuesday, I clear my entire watch list. Then I listen to the waiver wire pod that's on this podcast feed. And literally every single player that you talk about, Eric, I'm just adding them to my watch list. Because I have so many leagues, the only reasonable thing to do to try to help speed up the amount of time that I'm doing waivers is add everyone to my watch list and then go to each league, go to players available, hit that watch list, and just see who's available. And some leagues, it might be zero. Some leagues, it might be there's 10 guys available. And I make all my waiver moves based on that. And so if there's 10 guys available, I'm looking at my team seeing, okay, who can I drop for these 10 guys? Like, how many guys do I actually not need and things like that. But being able to say, I hit on that guy. I recognize that, you know, he was there, and rather than it just being, I don't have room on my roster because I'm only rostering 25 guys, like taking that gamble, getting him onto your team and then seeing him pop off, especially because I do so much best ball, he actually will go into my lineup. I love being able to have those results on my team.
Yeah, I still go back and forth on whether I like a 30-man roster league or a 40-man roster league, whatever it is. I think I like having a little bit shallower, like 30, 32. That way, there's at least some players on waivers once in a while. Even like shallower than that, like there's definitely some players on waivers. I think if you get to like the 40-man rosters or bigger than that, like the waivers is like, eh. You know, you have like one or two guys during the year that pop up, and that's about it. But I think with the way people are playing Dynasty now with like backup quarterbacks, backup running backs, like they're all owned. Like, so the waivers, like the last year or two, have been just completely dog shit to me. So maybe going on in the future, I try and get in some more shallower leagues that at least make the waiver wire and your fab money at least a little more important than it already is. Because there's some leagues like, you know, $1,000 budget, and I still had $800 at the end of the year just because, you know, I'm not spending $500 on a Clayton Tune or something, you know, just because he has a start, or a Desmond Ridder who started or whatever it is. So that's one. And then you kind of talked about best ball and lineup. You do you prefer best ball more than lineup?
I prefer best ball just because I don't want to spend my entire Sunday morning checking lineups and trying to keep track of, okay, is this guy actually active today? Do I need to make any roster moves? Things like that. I'm in about 10 lineup leagues, and that's right about the limit of what I reasonably want to do. So that way I'm not taking my entire Sunday morning and just setting a bunch of lineups.
Yeah, one thing I do during the week is I'm multiple times going through my lineups every day. Usually like definitely the Thursday, before the Thursday games, I'll go through, make sure all my Thursday guys are set for that, and I have them in the proper positions. And then Friday, Saturday, probably more on Saturday, I go through again and just go through all the lineups. Anybody that's listed as out, you know, I IR them if I can, pick up somebody, do all that kind of legwork. And then, you know, that way on Sunday morning, like, I don't have too many roster decisions to make. I'm waiting for 11:30 basically to see if there's anybody that I may have had in a lineup get ruled out, so I'll go and change that. Or if, you know, another guy's ruled out that maybe changes, you know, like Kenneth Walker, for example, he get ruled out randomly at the end of the week, and oh man, I gotta go put all my Charbonnet in now. So there's only a few of those instances that happen during the year, but as long as you, for me personally, I just keep up on my lineups every single day almost. Especially when I'm doing waivers, I set my initial first lineup to, and then obviously it evolves throughout the week when people get ruled out randomly that, you know, didn't even know you were injured and now you're ruled out, stuff like that. So it does take a little bit more time, like you said, than best ball. But I think it's part of the strategy of, you know, or not really strategy, but, the ability to win a league. Like, if you can make the right decisions every single week, man, you can, you know, it's a skill. So that's kind of how I look at it. So going into a startup, you have your settings and whatnot. How do you like to do, like, the draft spot? Do you like to pick at the beginning? Do you like to pick at the end? If you're doing, like, a derby and you pick your spot, like, what would be your ideal spot that you usually like?
I completely base it on, am I getting one of those? For this year, it's going to be a top four quarterback. I either want to be able to get Jaden Daniels, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson. Those four guys, if I know I can get one of those four guys, yeah, give me one of the first four picks in the draft. If I don't have one of those first four picks, then I am going to be the person that's trying to get to the very end. I want to be able to see how everyone else does it and then react to what they're doing. So give me the 112 or 111, 110, something like that. And I'll just see, okay, how is everyone else trying to build? And I'm just going to try and build in a different way. Usually in most leagues, you can find a way. It's not just, hey, you have to build in one direction. There might be a couple different ways that are like optimal strategies. And so if everyone at the beginning is grabbing a quarterback, okay, I'm going to be the person that's going to tap two wide receivers off the board. I've done a couple leagues where I think it was in 2023, I had the 112. It went all the way down the list. You had all your standard quarterbacks go. You had those top couple wide receivers, just Jefferson, Chase, CeeDee Lamb go. And I was like, all right, nobody's touched the running back position, so Bijan and Breece, you're mine. Like, nobody else gets a young stud running back. I'm the only one that gets them. And stuff like that where, okay, I'm going to play those kinds of games of, I want to have an edge somewhere, and the way to do that is to just react to what does the rest of your league let you do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like trying to get an edge at the end of the draft too. Like you talked about, all the quarterbacks go, those top receivers go. Okay, where can I get my edge? And getting like the two stud running backs, like you talked about, could definitely be it. I could grab a stud running back, and if it's a 2-point tight end, I can grab the top tight end if I want. You know, if there's like a top prospect that, you know, no one's taken yet, just because, you know, say Marvin Harrison Jr., for example, from last year, everyone was taking him high. You could grab him, or you can grab two of the top prospects coming out, even like that too. Or if you have the draft picks available, you can just go, fuck it, I'm just going to go 101 and 102 rookie picks and just build a really, really young team too. So there's definitely some advantages to picking at the end for sure. Do you like third round reversals or no?
I think that they should be the standard.
Yeah.
And okay. So I love third round reversals. T-Rock last week, he was talking about how he's not a fan of the third round reversal. And I'm like, any league that I'm joining with you, T-Rock, there will be a third round reversal. So go find other people to play in your non-third round reversal leagues. But realistically, I think if T-Rock and I are in a league together, it's an auction startup anyway. So that doesn't even matter at that point.
Right. I think that's also another good point you brought up a little bit ago and then just now. How important is it for you to have lots of different league mates, like just people that you don't even know or never played with against, instead of like a whole league of South Harmon people? Like, is that really important to you, or do you kind of try and find a league where there's like maybe one other South Harmon guy in it?
I don't try and find a league where I know South Harmon people. So I mentioned earlier how like the league mates are one of the primary things that I'm looking for. But I like having a few different groups of people that I tend to play in a bunch of leagues with. South Harmon obviously is the one that I play the most with, but I'm trying to keep my number of South Harmon leagues somewhere around the 40% mark. I'm trying not to have all of my leagues be with a ton of South Harmon people. There are a couple of leagues. I'm in one league where randomly Kilmo and Liebert, they both happen to join the same random league that I joined. And so I'm in it with those two guys. Like I know them from the South Harmon community, but the point is it's not a ton of South Harmon people. And so that's I'm trying to avoid only playing with South Harmon people. Because I think it helps give me a little bit of perspective as well of what is the broader Dynasty community doing by playing in some leagues with people that are not part of our community, where in any of the South Harmon leagues, you want to get yourself a starting quarterback in the NFL, you're paying this quarterback is starting tax. And depending on the quality of the quarterback, that's going to be some absurd amount over what the normal price would be. But any league that's not South Harmon, it's a little easier to try and build some of those strategies. Try to get trade for those top quarterbacks because they will value the top tier wide receivers similar to them. And being able to go back and forth between those two leagues is it kind of helps give some different perspective of, okay, I know this market is going to be different. In the South Harmon League, I know the market's going to be heavily quarterback weighted. In a non-South Harmon League, I know it's going to be heavily wide receiver weighted. And I can use that to try and play with some different strategies and build my teams differently in terms of what that optimal strategy is. Where I was talking about my optimal strategy is based on what the market of the league is. I don't want all my leagues to be, I'm trying to punt quarterback because everyone else in my league just obsesses over them with absurd value prices.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I try and joined some leagues last year that had different people in it from, I think they were posted in the Discord server, and joined those leagues. And there wasn't very many people that I had played in leagues with. And I joined like maybe two or three of those different types of leagues last year. And they were fun. Like, everybody had a little bit of different strategy. The one league I kind of quarterback hoarded, and they were like, oh, this guy's just hoarding all the quarterbacks, blah, blah, blah. So I was able to do that a little bit and kind of just go from there. Yeah. So I agree with you on that. I like to try and expand, away from just all South Harmon people. I might have a couple leagues here and there that have that, but not too many. So I agree with you on that. I'm going to try and find some more leagues this year that have, less people that I haven't played with before. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, find those guys that are new to the community posting their league where they're like, hey, I just need two more managers. Like, those are perfect ones to just hop in and be like, all right, you've got 10 people that you don't know anything about them. Have fun. Like, those leagues can be really enjoyable.
And you can, just basically go however you want almost. So, but speaking of going however you want, I think it's really important to look at the warp tool before you start any of your drafts. So give me your breakdown on how you use your own tool, the warp tool, on how you go about, getting ready to start an auction league or a snake draft, whatever it is. How do you go about using the warp tool? What are the things that you look for and that our listeners could use in their future startups?
If it's an auction or a snake, it totally differs in how I use the warp tool. So if it's a snake draft startup, I go much closer to what you talked about last week of you pull up the warp tool, you take a look at it, and then that's basically all you need to do. And then as you're going through the draft, you start referring back to it. And so usually what I'll do is I often it this sounds horrible. I often won't look at the settings of the league until I'm like four rounds into the startup. Just in terms of what are the actual scoring settings, what are like how many of each position do I actually need on this roster? Like I'll get a quick glance and notice like, oh, this is a two tight end, or like, oh, it's got a lot of flex spots or something like that. But until like somebody is prompting me with like a trade where they're trying to like do like if they're trying to like move up in the draft, I'll be like, okay, is it better to actually have depth in this league or not? But I often won't really look at the details of, oh, this league has this exact number of points for receptions, and this and the tight ends have this exact PPR and things like that. I'll just be looking at the warp tool, and I have a pretty good idea of, okay, I look at that, what is the actual value of all these players, and then just know, okay, yeah, the quarterbacks are still valuable in this league, so I want to get one of the top four rushing quarterbacks. And if I don't get that, I can build a strategy off of the wide receivers at that point or something along those lines. And so I'll have that strategy for the first couple picks. And then it's not until I'm getting later on where I really start digging in of, okay, how am I actually going to piece this together? And so it's usually that around 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there is when I really start going, okay, I'm almost at the point of needing to lock in a strategy. Because up until that point, you're choosing two players. Like it's not going to, and those two players are going to be studs. Like that's what your first and second round guys are. You get to your round three guys, like those guys can be studs, but there's a reason they aren't round one or two. And then 4 and 5 is really where you start choosing, okay, am I trying to compete year one? Am I trying to maybe do a productive struggle? Am I trying to just totally throw year one in the towel and try to go for better rookie picks? Am I trying to build a team around a certain position? Like, where am I trying to build my advantage? And I prefer to let the first couple rounds just go through however they decide to fall, and then I start paying attention to it at that point. And so that's when I really dig in. I dig into the settings, and that's sometimes when I learn, like, oh, wow, we have all these bonuses for these big scores, and we have we've got the extra points for first down for tight ends and stuff like that. Like, I will have not really paid attention to that before we get 3, 4 rounds into the startup.
Man, breaking like the number one rule of not looking at the settings.
but the fun thing is I'm at the point now, I look at the warp tool so often that like I can oftentimes say what the settings are for a league, right? Just straight from looking at it. And right. Sure, I might think that the tight end premium is an extra 0.25 higher because you do an extra point for first down. Like, right. Okay, I didn't get that right, but I got the idea behind it right of mm-hmm. You have a higher premium on tight ends because they're getting bonus points for doing some normal action. Right. And that doesn't really change anything in terms of how you're actually drafting. And so I don't need to really start grinding those things until you get to the later rounds. Because if you're looking at drafting a top tight end, because that's what the warp tool tells you, like you're getting Brock Bowers regardless of whether it's he has 2 PPR per catch or whether he gets a bonus point for first down or whether it's just yardage is boosted for tight ends. Like that, it doesn't matter what it is. You're going Brock Bowers as your tight end one. It might make a difference for when you're trying to decide, hey, who am I getting when it's when you're taking the 40th tight end off the board? Like those guys, like, okay, if it's the tight end position is heavily touchdown weighted, you want to go for those big bodied tight ends who are just going to catch that random touchdown pass. But or if it's heavily yardage weighted, like a guy like Pat Freiermuth, who gets a ton of yards but ends up missing out on a lot of touchdowns, is a guy that you might target ahead of where he would normally go. But you don't need to know that the first couple rounds into a startup.
Right. Well, I know me personally, I wouldn't recommend not looking at the settings at the beginning. Koopa's obviously experienced with his warp tool and can kind of look at it. But yeah, I would definitely look at my settings before I started any kind of draft. So you kind of talked about the lineup league there. How does it differ for an auction league for you using the warp tool to start?
So auction, I do a ton of preparation beforehand, because with an auction league, you're either doing it live, in which case you need to have your plan before you go in, or you are doing a slow auction where you have as much as like 36 or 48 players on the board at once. And if you have that much going on at once, you need to know, okay, who am I actually putting bids on? Because you can't bid on all 48 players at once. Like, you run out of money before you even get to like your sixth player, usually in that first round of auction. So what I end up doing is I go through the warp tool, and I detailed this in one of my podcasts from last year. You can go back and find the one. I literally called it like my startup auction strategy. And I calculate a bunch of numbers, essentially, based on the warp tool of the value of different positions and what the warp is of different player points and things like that, where I set budgets for every single position. And so the budget might look like I have $320 for quarterbacks, I have $210 for running backs, $340 for wide receivers, and another $150 for tight ends. I don't know whether that adds up to $1,000, but it's close enough. And those budgets are what I stick to for, okay, I want to, with those $320 at the quarterback position, I want to get two quarterbacks that are in the not great but good enough range. So maybe I'm fine with ending up with Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence. Like, they're fine, they're serviceable, and that's what I'm trying to do with that $320. And when I get those two guys and I end up spending $275, okay, now that frees up $45 that I can add to any other position. And I just keep track of my positional budgets the whole way around. And sometimes I notice in the middle of the auction, like, hey, these running backs are going super cheap. I haven't gotten a chance to spend my full $140 budget. And for what I'm trying to do, I know that I'm not going to need to. So let me steal $20 right now while I'm... this tight end I really want is on the board, reallocate it, and then bid higher up on that tight end compared to where I initially did it. And so I will go through, I'll have that plan with budgets, but be flexible during the draft, be willing to move them around. But the important thing about doing that is it helps you not overspend on any one player, on any one position. If you know that you need to get yourself four wide receivers in your wide receiver budget, and you're bidding $190 on wide receivers, on one wide receiver, and you have a budget of $300, you're going to be taking a big, long, hard look and being like, can I get everyone else I want out of the remaining $110? And so you can go through and be like, you know, I don't think that's going to happen, and then lay off the continued bidding on that wide receiver, so you don't end up in the situation of you're sitting there, you've got 10 players on your roster and $20 to your name, and you aren't bidding on anybody for a long time, and then your team is that team where it's like full studs and duds. Like, you've got 10 great guys and nobody else.
Yeah, I always hate being the one in the auction that spends a lot of his money early on, and you just have to sit there for like an hour, especially in a live auction, and you can't bid, do anything. All your money's like tied up into like four guys. Yeah, that's definitely not a great feeling. I always like to try and be like the guy towards the end that has the most money, so I can just kind of throw it around and get the guys that I want. So, but I like your idea of setting position budgets. I've never really tried that before. But I might have to in an auction this year, kind of set up a budget and stay in between those parameters and see if I can go there. And then, like you said, being flexible to being able to move some of your money if you need to, or if you got two cheap quarterbacks, like you said, like you got, Dak and Derek Carr, your quarterbacks, and I got some free money to go and I can go get some better wide receivers or better running backs, whatever it is. So I like that idea. And then I'm guessing in auction, you're kind of, do you target players? Do you target a certain setting strategy? Like if it's point per carry, I'm gonna make sure I get, these high volume running backs that get high carries, these quarterbacks that actually run the ball. How do you go about that?
I have this, I never write it down, but it probably would be good for organization purposes sometime. I have this archetype of, okay, I want one player who is like this. And so that this might be, hey, I want one of the top four rushing quarterbacks. I don't care which one I get, but I want one of them. And so if in my budget, I say I have $300 allocated to them. I'm going to pick one of those four quarterbacks, and I'm literally going to slap a $300 bid on them. And if somebody bids them up to 301, I'm just going to the next one in the list, slapping $300 on it. I'm not trying to, especially at the beginning of an auction, some of the best deals that you get are the players that go off the board first. It doesn't matter who it is, but as soon as people start realizing, oh, this guy went up, like if you've seen Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Jaden Daniels go off the board, Jalen Hurts is now the only top-tier rushing quarterback that is left. And everyone in your league that wants one of those guys also understands that Jalen Hurts is the last quarterback that is in that tier. And he will oftentimes go for more than all the other three. Even though, if you look at a normal snake draft startup, Jalen Hurts is the one that's going last. And so it's like those little things are, I'm going to have an archetype of, I want this kind of guy, and I'll have a list of, these are all the people that fit that. I'm willing to spend this much money on it. And so I'm just going to slap that bid on everyone. And if I get overbid, okay, then I get overbid. And I'm just always taking the one who's closest to going off the board. So if somebody put up Jaden Daniels first, and then 6 hours later is when Lamar and Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen went up, I'm just going to the Jaden Daniels one and resetting that one, because hopefully somebody else will reset the other three for me.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If I, the rushing quarterbacks, I'll put up the one that I want the most at 300, and if he gets outbid, okay, I move on to the next one, and then the next one, and until I hopefully get one of them. But yeah, like you said, there's always a bidding war for like that last guy in a tier too. So that's definitely something you can think about in your auction leagues and kind of be aware of. Just kind of, you can be aggressive in the beginning and just don't. Stay within your budgets, like Koopa was talking about. Don't go like overly crazy. Like, yeah, can I spend an extra 10, 15, $20? Sure. If you really want that guy, but don't do it for, $50, $60. You're going to really hurt yourself at some spots. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
And
How
the
about,
important
oh, good.
thing, the important thing about that too is you have to make sure that nobody's ever going and resetting you. You get your money back and you need to go to the next guy. So if I'm sitting there with, okay, Josh Allen is at 300, let's say I'm on Josh Allen at 300, and I know Jalen Hurts is going off the board in 7 hours, I'm setting that alarm. If he's going off the board at 3:20 a.m., I have an alarm set at 3:15 a.m. and I am waking up, rolling over, just pulling it up, seeing his Jalen Hurts been reset. If Jalen Hurts has been reset, all right, fine. I'm just putting the phone back down, going back to bed. But if he hasn't been reset, I'm going, am I still the lead bidder on Josh Allen? Because if I'm not, if somebody went and reset me, I'm then putting that bid in with 3 minutes left in order to take over that Jalen Hurts bid.
Yeah, I've done that a number of times too. It definitely leads to some long days at work doing that, but it's the sacrifice you have to make to get a good dynasty team. So how about trading draft picks or trading startup picks? So we'll start with the startup pick. So do you like, trading your first round pick to move up? Are you the kind that trades back? What's your strategy on trading your startup picks?
I hate giving away any of my future picks to move around in the draft. I think every single time that I have done that, it has worked out not in my favor. So I've just realized that, I struggle with doing that because with my strategy in terms of how I play, the things that work the best are me just finding the pockets of value where they exist. I don't need to make moves in order to fig to find the right players to build a competitive team. So I'm not going to force the issue of, hey, I want to move up around, and so I'm going to give up my second round pick, or I want to turn my fourth round pick into a second round pick, like in terms of startup values. So I'm going to give up a future first to do that. Like I'm not going to mess around with those things. And I'm not going to go out there and do anything where I am moving up using my futures. If I can move up for what I know is a really good value in terms of, like, let's say I have the 101, so I know that I'm going to take Jaden Daniels or Lamar or Josh Allen, and I'm talking to the owner of the 103, and they're interested in taking my second, third, and fourth, and I can go up and get that second one, and I know that plays into the strategy that I want to do there. Like something like that's a no-brainer to me. I'm using my second, third, and fourth, but I'm still making sure to get back on the back end. I'll get back like a 12th and 13th or something like that. And I'll always choose those picks based on the number of starters. So if there's a total number of starters, let's say it's a start 11, I want to get the 10th and 11th because the idea is, hey, I'm getting back the last two that would be in your starting lineup because I'm giving you so many others that would be in your starting lineup. But by the time you get to round 10, you already have 11 guys on your team. So you've got your full starting lineup filled out. You're just getting bench players anyway. Let me get my starters. That's like the kickback that's coming to me. And that's how I'll always do those trades. But I'm not going to go out there and try to aggressively like trading up in round five. It's just not worth it to me. Like I don't seek it out. If other people are trying to do something and they're giving you like an absolute steal of a deal, like, oh, I'm going to move up five picks in round five to move back two in round six and eight. Like, sure, I'll do that because I'm moving up more picks than I am going back. But I'm not going to go out, spend a bunch of future capital and potentially ruin my team by doing some sort of, I need to get this certain player. Because that reduces the flexibility that I have to find pockets of value for my team.
Yeah, so you're kind of like how Scott does it. I have to get the same amount of picks back, so if I'm giving up three picks, I got to get three picks. So I like that. And yeah, like I see what you're saying. I kind of never really thought about it that way, but like if I can get the 10th and 11th, and it's a start 11, I'm getting those extra two starters there. Plus, I probably, I haven't given up my 10th and 11th. I'm getting two players there and another two players there. So, I do like that idea too. I'm gonna have to try that if I do some startups this year where I end up moving up like that. You talked about you didn't like trading your future picks, like your 2025 first or anything like that. Any like certain reason why, other than it just hasn't worked out for you or?
And I find that in addition to it not working out, like if you trade away your future first, so like this offseason, if you trade away your 2026 first, you know you are forced into competing. And if a bunch of other managers also start taking the same competitive players that you want to take, you're now potentially taking guys at the tops of tiers. You're taking guys who are not the ones that you would want, and passing up on these rookie players or younger players who maybe aren't as productive in order to try and get as many points now. And I don't want that. I don't want to be forced into taking any players. I want to just let players come to me. And so trading away my future first just limits that strategy entirely. You're limiting the total pool that is available to you, and you're at the mercy of your league mates of hoping that enough other people are not also trying to compete.
Yeah, I tend not to do it either, unless it is like a player that I just gotta have. You know, if it's like you talked about earlier, if it's to get one of those stud four rushing quarterbacks, and he really wants that first, and if I gotta do it, you know, then I gotta do it. But I'm guaranteeing myself two of those four quarterbacks, then yeah, I'm gonna be okay trading my first, because I'm gonna think, you know, in this league I should be able to, you know, win a lot of games with Lamar Jackson and Jaden Daniels as my two quarterbacks or whatnot. So there are some instances where I do it, but I tend not to as well. So I'm with you there. Now, how about like building your actual team? Do you like to go with a lot of these older guys and compete? Do you like to go all young and kind of punt the first year or two? Or do you kind of like do what I do and draft young players who are productive and I'm going for the win this year too, but keeping my team relatively young?
The short answer is all three. So I'll usually choose a direction that I'm trying to go by the time I get to round five, round six of, okay, is my league letting a bunch of the productive young guys be the fallers? Or are they just letting the young non-producers be the ones that fall, or are they just letting the veterans be the ones that fall? This past off season, it was a lot of the veterans. And so that's what I ended up going for a bunch was, okay, you know what? Everyone is just passing on anyone who's over the age of 28.
Yeah, like so Adams, Diggs, Evans, those guys, Alvin Kamara, like those guys just fell. Like
Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon, so much. And so like I got so many of those guys because everyone was just passing on all of them. But if the dynasty landscape shifts, and I'm sure it will at some point, where, hey, a bunch of those guys are being valued higher up in the startup, then okay, I'm going to shift off of getting those guys and I'll be getting some younger players. And it's all just reacting to what is my league giving me. And by the time you get to round five or six, you're one of the last ones to choose your direction at that point. You can usually identify how everyone else is going by that point, especially if there's been a bunch of trades. And so I'm able to say, okay, I've got seven people that are trying to compete, three people that are in nuclear tanks. And so that leaves two of us to scoop up all the guys that aren't the huge producers, but are still relatively young. I'll be one of those two because I'm only competing with one other manager and maybe he's on the other side of the draft board. So I've got nobody near me trying to get the same players. Like that's the position that I want to be in.
Okay. One other thing about trades, do you like to trade back? So like if you're picking at the 108, somebody wants to come up for your 108 and you move back, you get like a second and a fourth or whatever it is. Are you the type of manager that likes to do that and like just keep trading back and accumulating like a bunch of 3, 4, 5, 6 round picks?
Yeah, I will happily do that. As long as I'm getting the requisite return in terms of if this was a lineup league, it's a lot harder for me to necessarily do that because I know that I can make up my team off of just having a few studs. So I almost will need a little bit of an overpay in order to actually move up and take one of those studs from me. But if it's a situation where it's a best ball league and I've got somebody that wants my 108, they're offering that second and fourth, or even if, let's say the owner of the the 203 is wanting to come up to the 108, so that way they can take the 108 and their 110. And they're willing to offer me a future second. And this is a league where I'm viewing the player at the 108 in the same tier as the guys that are in the 203. Like, okay, I'll let you pay a second to move up in a tier, and I'll just stay in the same tier, and I'll just, I might change the position that I'm targeting, but it's, as long as it's in the same relative range, I don't really care that much. And I'll accumulate those extra draft picks or those extra later picks where, okay, if you're sending this the second and fourth, I'm viewing it as, okay, I am upgrading my, let's say it needs to be my 10th round pick to move up to the fourth. I'm upgrading my 10th to a fourth. Well, who's available in the 10th round and who's available in the fourth round? I just put names to all of these picks, and it just helps me process like, okay, a guy in this range is what I'm upgrading here, and I'm downgrading a guy from this range to that one. If that seems something reasonable that I would do in any league that's already established, I'm totally fine doing it in a startup.
Yeah, I like that idea of putting names to the picks too. That definitely helps me in some trades as well. So hopefully that'll help our listeners when they do some trades in their startup leagues this offseason. Anything else on startups that we haven't kind of touched that, you know, you think are pretty important to you?
I think the biggest thing is to not try and overdo it. I see a lot of people that try too hard in a startup sometimes. Like, they're trying to make trades and like get themselves the perfect team full of all of the guys that they want. And I think if you do that, you end up finding yourself burning out like all of your value way too quickly. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you... I've just seen so much success from the people that, like, kind of like you were saying, of you try to have the big budget at the end, or you're just trying to take what I'm saying in this, the normal like snake draft startup, where I'm just taking the value that falls to me. That guy that right. is five picks past his ADP, like I'm drafting him. Like, those kinds of things are where you really gain your value and where you gain your long-term vision for your team and where you have your biggest success. Where those guys who are going in saying, I want to leave it with this player, this player, this player, and I'm going to make sure that happens, you always end up blowing everything where you are relying on every single one of your takes being right. And in a startup draft, stuff is going to go wrong. Like, there's nothing that you can do in the right now. It's January. You can do nothing in January that is going to be anywhere close to a guarantee by the time September rolls around. And so you need to remember that you're playing the odds game. And then the other thing is, because we're in January right now, it's the time for rookie picks. Rookie picks are if rookie picks are included as the picks, like you're using kicker placeholders or something like that, always remember that those picks get more valuable over time. Mm-hmm. And that drafting a bunch of them now is almost always a winning strategy. People will be like, I could get a kicker, or I could get this guy's name that I really like. And if you just end up hammering those kickers, you end up with an awesome team compared to where everyone else is looking. You get to August, September, everyone's like, how the heck did Koopa end up with this team? Like, this is just right. stacked. And it's just because all I did was just draft a bunch of kickers, and then I had the whole rookie draft to myself.
Yeah.
And there was one league last year that kind of became a joke. I've named my team the 2024 draft class. It was a shit IDP 202. And round one, I drafted Micah Parsons because I just wanted a defensive player because it's an IDP league. And then rounds 2 through 56 or 57, I drafted literally only draft picks, with the exception of in round 9, I drafted Travis Kelce. And because I was just like, this is too late for Travis Kelce to still be on the board. He was like the 9th tight end off the board, or 8th, or something like that. And I drafted only rookie picks. And so this past year, I missed the playoffs by a total of 1 win or like 50 points forced or something like that. Wow. Had I made the playoffs because of how rookie players tend to do better at the end of the season, I would have made it to the championship game. I had the highest points scored for both the quarterfinals and semifinals weeks.
Wow.
And so like it's that kind of thing where my team was in a position to be able to run it and just absolutely dominate this league just by, I basically only have rookie players. And then I'm also abusing the sleeper best ball rules of, is if you don't want to make a roster move, you're allowed to be over by the number of players. So before the rookie draft, I dropped all 54 kickers I had. I picked up 54 random defensive players off the waiver wire who I just knew would more than likely make 53-man rosters. And like, I think I hit on 45 of them or something like that.
Wow.
And so I just have an extra 45 eligible players on this team, and I'm just abusing the whole best ball. Like, that sleeper doesn't punish you. MFL, like, invalidates your score for that week.
Yeah, that's one thing I don't like about MFL is the way that you can kind of cheat the system that way. But sleeper, not MFL. But, yeah, it's pretty good strategy, though. That worked out for you. I've had a couple leagues where I had a bunch of draft picks, too, and those are the fun, man. Like, you get to the draft, and you can manipulate it how you kind of want, and you're in control, and that's one of the best drafts, best things to do in a draft. I love doing that.
I just
don't get to do it often.
I remember going into that draft. I think it was, I had the 101, 102, and then Fizzle had the 103, and then I had 4, 5, and 6, and then Mike had 7. And I was like, okay, I know who Fizzle likes, so I'm just going to manipulate it such that I leave Fizz with, he's forced to take the guy he wants, which in this case was Marvin Harrison Jr. I purposely did not take Marv 1 and 2 because I did not want him to get an edge rusher. Right. And so then 4, 5, and 6, I then like went and took 3 edge rushers because I was like, I want to force Mike to not have to either take the last edge rusher that he wants or be forced to go into one of the other quarterbacks or wide receivers or something like that, where I know I'll get them because I have picks 8, 9, and 10 and things like that. Like, right, that sort of manipulation, it was so much fun doing that draft, just trying to choose, okay, who do I want them to end up with? I'll just let them have that player and force them to not get anyone else.
Yeah, that's always fun to do in drafts. I love doing that stuff. So, I got to find another way to do that in the league this coming year. Get all these draft picks. That's one of the fun things about in startups, when the rookie picks are actually in the draft, you can kind of go with that strategy as well. And you know, your teams usually turn out pretty decent because as long as you know what you're doing, you're drafting the right spots. Like, you usually get a pretty young team and they end up developing pretty decently. So I like doing that.
Yeah. I will say 2025 is maybe not the class to try that on and have the best expectations. So,
right. Unless it's like a point per carry league, because there are some hosses coming in at running back that I'd love to have. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, and then, I mean, like we kind of talked about earlier, man, the Warp Tool will help you out a ton in these startup leagues. You can look at these settings, you know, especially or sleeper MFL, doesn't matter. You know, just go right to that league, and it'll pop up with the scoring settings for your league there and what's going to be the most important positions to go for. Is there only, like, 2 top tight ends, and then after that they're all flat, like, either I'm getting Brock Bowers or Sam Laporta, whoever it is, and after that, I don't care if I don't get one of those guys. Or are the quarterbacks the king in this league? So I want to make sure I have three really good quarterbacks, because let's say 10 quarterbacks are the highest scorers in the league over running backs and receivers. Whatever it is, your warp chart is going to tell you, hey, this is where I need to go in my drafts. You know, if the running backs are higher than the receivers, okay, I need to probably get more running backs in this league than I do wide receivers. If it's a wide receiver heavy, okay, I'm going to go wide receivers over running backs, and maybe I get one good running back, and then the rest I kind of don't care about. So Warp Tool will help you out a ton in your startups. I guarantee if you follow that, you're going to have, you know, success in your league. You might not win your league, but you're going to probably be in the playoffs if you can follow that simple formula there. And obviously injuries happen too, so that happens. But yeah, Warp Tool, definitely a great tool to have. SouthHarmonFF.com. Make sure you guys go over there, sign up. You can get the Warp Tool monthly or yearly, whichever you prefer, and use it in all your leagues. Even in leagues you have currently going on right now, if you need to reset your roster construction and you need to see, like, hey, what are the positions that are scoring the most in these leagues? I want to go ahead and do that. And then I'll let you kind of talk about it too. You can go back and look at historical warp for your league for like the last 5 years or whatnot. So I'll let you touch on that before we finish up.
Yeah, the main screen that I use is the multi-year graph. Since I implemented that, like, I've just found that's my landing spot. And so I'll just pull up the warp for a league, look at the multi-year, because we know in the past year, we're like, hey, running backs did really well. And the year before that, we knew that it was the era of the wide receiver. But average it out across 5 years. What does that actually look like in terms of warp? What does it look like when you are not biased towards any 1 year? And that can help you be close no matter what year it is. If you know that, hey, the running backs are by far ahead of any other position on average, like, if running backs have a down year in 2025, then you know you're still going to be close. Like, you might not be as dominant, but you're still going to be near there. You're still going to be in the show. You're still going to be competing for that championship. If it's a year where, okay, running backs are dominant in this league, and the running backs were dominant like they were in 2024, now all of a sudden you're just the dominant team in your league. Like, nobody can touch you. And so that's the kind of thing that you can look at with the warp tool. You can play with, okay, what does it look like going across multiple years, just so I have an idea of over time, where do I want to focus my value? You don't want to try and compete in 1 year windows in Dynasty. Usually you're trying to compete for 2 years. You get lucky if you can get three. And since no 2 years are the same, like, we see that in fantasy, that 1 year is one way, it completely flips the next year. If you have a team that is built based on your league settings, then you can be competitive both of those years. Whereas if you build a team that is based on what is the NFL doing this year, the following year, you might be that team that goes from finishing second, running up in the championship, to earning that 103. And you don't know where that came from. Like, you're like, something totally went wrong. And it's just because you were invested in the wrong positions. You were going counter to the scoring in your league. So I use the warp tool all the time. I literally go to my browser at home. I type the letter W and I hit enter, because just that's it. It auto knows that when I type W, I'm trying to go to the warp page. And so that is the, I go there every single time I'm getting a trade offer to me. I'm going there every single time that once I get past those first couple picks in the startup, I'm going there every single time I'm on the clock. I'm pulling it up every single time. I'm checking the auction pages. I'm going there anytime in rookie drafts. Like, I will check it every single time I'm making a pick. I will pull up the warp chart, just double check, hey, do I know what this league is like? And it just helps you get a grounding for, okay, this is what the strategy is. This is what I want to be doing. And it helps you make sure that you aren't straying too far. Like, sometimes it's fine to be like, you know what? Wide receivers aren't great in this league, but if everybody's letting me have four of the top 20 guys, like, obviously you're going to try and give yourself a positional advantage there. But then when you pull up the warp chart, when somebody's offering to pay what would be considered market price for one of those top wide receivers in a normal league, and you pull up the warp chart, you're like, wait a second, wide receiver's depressed in this league. Then you know immediately, you know what? Regardless of what my roster construction is, I should probably just take this and then figure it out on the back end. I should, because the wide receiver, I'm getting better value than this league on it. And like, it helps give you that extra reassurance and that extra perspective of like, yes, you are doing the right thing. Or when, in the case of if you were about to do the wrong thing, it's holding you back and being like, hey, wait a second. Maybe you should not trade away that top tier quarterback in this heavily quarterback weighted league. Even though it is market price, like in this league, he's worth more than that. So 100% go and check it out. We've got a ton of content on both the podcast feed and on the South Harmon YouTube about how we utilize it. And I'm going to be doing some episodes of my podcast coming up in this off season about various things that I utilize it for, how I utilize some of the different tabs and things like that. And then you can also reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Dynasty Koopa. On Discord and Blue Sky, I'm at Koopa Troopa 8. Like, you can just find me on something, send me a message, and I will get back to you. As of the date of this recording, I literally had somebody message me today and be like, hey, can you walk me through what the roster construction tab means and what all these numbers are? And I helped walk him through with the exact settings of his league, being like, hey, this is what it's saying, so this is how you want to try and build that roster construction for this league, and just helped him out. So I am available. Please reach out to me, because that's the kind of stuff that helps make it a value to you too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's perfect way to go through it there. SouthHarmonFF.com. You can go ahead and purchase the warp tool there monthly or yearly. And yeah, like Koopa said, if you have any questions, just reach out to him. He's more than happy to help anybody out that has the warp tool and kind of show you the ropes on how to use it. And you're going to improve how you play in Dynasty, where you finish in your Dynasty leagues, and just improve your roster construction and everything. So yeah, definitely a very useful tool to use. All right, let's go ahead. Let's wrap it up. Let's go ahead, do America's favorite game, and then we'll head on out of here. All right, so I know me and you usually we like to do racing stuff, so I'm going to give you a racing one. What is your favorite Formula One paint scheme of all time?
Ooh. Favorite one of all time. I think I have to go with that Gulf McLaren. Like, okay. That orange, and there's something about that orange and like light blue. It's something that it's just so drastically different in seeing those two colors next to each other. Like, it gives you that, like, a lot of the modern color schemes that you see now are they all kind of look the same. Like, I had a real hard time I think it was in last year's season, where like every single team was either like dark blue or red. And it was like you're watching the race, and you like have to take half a second anytime they change the camera angle of like, which car is it that I'm looking at? Whereas like this year it was a little better in that the Kick Sauber team was bright green, so you at least knew, okay, that's that car. And like they made it a little easier to watch with the paint schemes for 2024. But something about orange and blue, it just stood out, and it's like you immediately knew, like, oh, I know exactly which car that is.
Yeah, so that's definitely a good one. I was just looking at one of my ones. I always, when I was a big fan watching when I was a kid, I always liked the Michael Schumacher Benetton. So that was like the light blue, green, and yellow car. That was always one of my favorites. I did like the McLaren, like kind of like Lewis Hamilton's early years. They had the silver and the red. The silver was kind of like a chrome, so that was a really cool one. And I really dig the for modern day, the black and green Mercedes that Lewis and George Russell raced a lot this year. I really like that one too. And then I would probably say my actual favorite would probably be, I know McLaren had it, and if you're followed like IndyCar racing, it's pretty predominantly a Penske car, but the red and white Penske scheme that they used to run on all their cars, and McLaren had it there for a little bit too. The Marlboro Penske cars, those are always my probably my favorite paint scheme for open wheel cars like that. So that was probably my favorite.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out too to the Lotus, that golden black.
The black and gold one,
Just
yeah.
that one was just really, I love seeing like a dark color with something bright that it just paired with it, because
Yeah.
it once again it's easy to tell, like, oh, that is that car. Like,
Right.
I never want it to be something that's close to anything else. I want it to be something that stands out. As soon as you see it, you're like, I know which car that is that I'm looking at.
Another one that's kind of cool. I'm gonna send it to you in Discord so you can see it. Have you ever seen the six-wheeled F1 car?
Yes. Yeah,
Yes,
the
the blue and white Elf car that had
Yep.
six wheels. So it had a big rear tire and four like mini front tires. It didn't, obviously catch on. Otherwise, we'd still be using it today. But pretty cool that like you see a F1 car with like six wheels on it.
That whole era of F1 has some bizarre cars with it. You got the
Yeah.
fan car, the one that had the fan helping suck it down to the
Oh
road even better for better grip and things like
yeah.
that. Like, stuff like that, where it's like there was a whole period of experimentation that just, can I stick X onto a car was probably tried to
Right.
see if they
Yeah.
could make a faster F1 car.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool, like, being able to see some of those cars nowadays. I'm like, what did those things look like?
Yeah, it was pretty wild back in the day for sure with innovation and trying all kinds of different things. So, yeah, no, I think we came up with some pretty good iconic paint schemes there that we both like. So,
Yeah. As an addendum, I gotta ask you watching any of the Rolex, or I guess it's Daytona 24, they call it the Rolex 24 now, this weekend?
I'll definitely watch that this weekend. It'll probably be on. Like, I usually have. Like there'll be some other things on TV, so like I know wrestling's on this weekend a little bit. Obviously the playoff games on Sunday, so but those are usually that race is usually over on Sunday before the playoff games start, so that's not bad. But yeah, I usually stay up really late on Saturdays, and whether it's on Peacock or if it's on USA Channel or whatever it's on, I usually have it on, yeah, and just watch it. Like I don't have like a specific team I root for. Like maybe there's a driver in there that I root for, and so I'll kind of just root for that team. But I just kind of just watch it to watch. I don't really have like a specific team that I'm rooting for or anything like that. How about you?
I've got a couple guys that I like to root for. I like rooting for Kamui Kobayashi wherever he's at. He's driving one of the Cadillacs this year. Ben Keating is another guy that I like rooting for. Ben Keating, he'll never drive in one of the top classes, but usually at Daytona, he'll drive two different cars.
Yeah, two different
So
cars, yep.
he'll be in a GT car. And he'll also drive an LMP2, and so he'll split his time between both of them. So he'll usually like drive the LMP2 for a stint during the day, then go drive like three stints in the GT3 at night, and then the following morning hop back in the LMP car and do two more stints there or something like that. And I love rooting for him, just off of one of the first times that I watched the 24 Hours of Le Mans was when he was driving the car, and he's a amateur driver, not a pro driver. And he cramped up his legs so bad, like driving the car, where he was like constantly complaining about it on the radio, and like when they pulled him out of the car with 45 minutes left to go in the race, like he couldn't walk. Like, yeah, that's how bad his left leg was cramping on him. But he was holding off a pro driver behind him for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it was like, just seeing a guy like that, I was just like, just instant fan of him. And yeah, so I just love seeing him in any car that he's racing in.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, should be interesting, a race this weekend. Usually is it better than that one a couple years ago where it rained for like 24 hours straight? It was like,
yeah,
they had to like red flag it for like 9 hours or something crazy like that. So hopefully, yep, we don't get that this time. Hopefully it's nice weather. But yeah, that's going to be it. Koopa, appreciate having you on as always, man. Thanks for joining us. And anything else you got before we head on out of here?
No, just as a listener, take advantage of the NFL playoffs. Enjoy it. You got some good football on. And so just take a break from fantasy for a couple days. Enjoy, yeah, some good football, and make sure to be ready, recharge in order to hit it as we get into the off season, because that's where things get really important.
For sure, for sure. Good advice. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Episode 78 in the books. At Eric Vanek NFL and at America's Game Pod. Follow us there on Twitter. At South Harmon FF as well. Give us a follow there. At Dynasty Koopa, right?
Yep, at Dynasty Koopa on Twitter and at Koopa Troopa 8 everywhere else.
Okay. Awesome. So follow all of us there, all those accounts. We really appreciate it. And for that, we'll see you guys next week for episode number 79.